All right, let's be real. What has been the hardest thing about your pregnancy and postpartum journey? Is it the postpartum painful sex that nobody talks about? What are you supposed to do with that? Is it the fact that you might have torn during delivery and you have no idea how to heal now that you're in postpartum? Welcome to the Onas Podcast, where we bring on mothers, parents, and pregnant postpartum individuals to talk about their journey and their experiences to give that knowledge back to people that need it. And we are also attached to theonascollaborative.com, which is a free online educational directory where we help moms and parents connect to maternity care providers in their local area. We are here to give the power back to you guys so you have a choice in your journey. We'll have space for midwives, doulas, pelvic floor PTs, massage therapists. And as we continue expanding, we hope that we can support you. All right, we hope you enjoy this podcast. Welcome back to the Onas Podcast. My name is Erin. I am your host and also the founder of the Onas Collaborative. Today we're back with part two of Kayla's story. So last week Kayla talked to us about her first and second birth experience and pregnancy where she dealt with domestic violence and other issues that came up during her second pregnancy. And now we're into her third pregnancy and birth story, which is very exciting. And I just can't wait for you all to hear this episode. And yeah, here we go.
Let's see where to begin. So when we got pregnant with my third baby, COVID had pretty much just happened. And my husband, who used to work in an office, they pretty much moved his office to completely remote and working at home. Mm-hmm. So we were like, well, we feel like COVID's going to be lasting for a while, which means you're going to be home for a while. So why not have a third baby? You know, seems like a good time. Yeah. We were like, let's just do this. Like, we're going to both be home with all of our kids all the time. So let's just throw one more in the mix. So, you know, at this point we had, my son had just turned one. My daughter was about to turn three. It was just, it's so crazy when I look back on it, you know, just the decision process that we had. So we started trying and pretty much immediately again, got pregnant. And again, we just weren't expecting that. I mean, you know, with our history, you'd think I'd catch on by now that we get pregnant pretty quickly, but we still thought that we'd start trying and we just have some time, but nope, pretty much right away pregnant. And, from that moment on, I was just really excited about this pregnancy, but I still had cholestasis, just kind of like this cholestasis cloud lingering over my head. Yeah. And I was like, well, what do I do? And what provider do I see? So I actually started with the OB that ended up doing my induction with my son, because after some research, it basically says, you know, if you've had cholestasis in one pregnancy, you'll have it in consecutive pregnancies. Yeah. So I pretty much started right away with my OB, and I pleaded with them, like, tell me anything. I'll do anything not to have cholestasis again. What can I do? And they basically told me, too bad, so sad, there's nothing I can do. And they would bet almost 99% that I would be right back there getting induced at 37 weeks again. And I just didn't accept that. I didn't accept that there was nothing that could be done to try to prevent it.
Yeah.
And I wanted there to be a better answer, a better option for me. Even if it didn't end up working out, I wanted there to be some help and some support in trying to make it happen for me. So I, you know, did my own research and I decided, well, you know, I wasn't too pleased with that answer, so I'm going to switch my care. So I actually found this birth center. But the previous birth center that I birthed at had closed down. And so I found this other birth center and, you know, I went to them and I said, help me, what can I do? What can be different this time? You know, and they gave me some options for taking things like dandelion root and drinking just tons of water and doing lemon water. Just in general, like gut and liver health things.
Yeah. So really supporting your liver.
Yeah. And I was also seeing a chiropractor at this time and they are amazing. And they did this like nutritional course with me to try to help me focus on whole foods and whole food dieting. And then, they also put me on some supplements that from Standard Process, which is AF beta food and Colicol. And those were just some things that I could take before eating meals to help aid in digestion. And so I was doing all these things. And so at this point I had dropped my provider that was my OB because I, again, just did not accept that that was their answer and that was their response. They weren't really willing to help me dig for research and find something new. And then I went to the next step, which is birth center, which was great. Their answers were better, but still not best. Mm-hmm. And I had a doula at this point, not the same one that I had with my second pregnancy, because she decided to not be a doula anymore. And she is actually going to be a midwife. So I reached out to another doula in the area who they worked together previously. And I reached out to her and said, I really think I want to do a home birth. Mm-hmm. And in North Carolina, home birthing is like super top secret, because it's not illegal for you as a mom, as a birthing mom or birthing person, to have a baby at home, but it is illegal for certified professional midwives to assist you in birthing at home. Yeah. So, you know, finding these people on your own is really hard to do because they are on lockdown. So I called my doula and she was like, well, let's talk about this. I want to make sure you're really serious, because she didn't want to give out any names, you know, just in case. I was just kind of kicks and giggles. And so once I told her about all the things that I'd been going through and kind of dealing with, she right away connected me with my home birth midwife. Now she gave me options and names of other people. And I actually did 4 interviews of home birth midwives, all the while still seeing the birth center midwives. At the birth center, they had an OB there. So it was kind of my comfort zone that if I ended up with cholecystitis again and I had to have a hospital induction, that, you know, they were kind of my fallback. So I should say I did co-care at this point. And, you know, again, it was just my fallback. It was my safety net, but not, they weren't who I wanted to deliver with.
Yeah.
So finally, after interviewing 4 home birth midwives, I found the one that I absolutely loved and chose her as my midwife and was very committed to home birthing. At this point, my husband wasn't the most on board with it. He was really nervous after our last experience with cholestasis, thinking I would probably get it again. But after a lot of research that both of us did, we actually both came to the agreement that it was the best and safest option because of the one-on-one care that I'd be getting. And also he felt comfortable knowing that I had a backup plan just in case I had cholestasis again by having the birth center option with the OB on call.
Yeah.
So my home birth care was just so amazing. Like, I felt like my midwife became a part of our family. I just love her so much. I mean, she would come and we would just sit and talk about all the things. She dug elbows deep with me in research to help me, you know, prevent cholestasis. She supported all of my efforts and she was just very honest with me about what was realistic and what was not. And that was something I was appreciated with her, because you never want someone to put you on this runaround. You know, if you have a previous health condition in pregnancy, something like cholestasis that could come up again, you know, she was just so in tune with me and supportive of whatever I needed. And that was so, I don't know, I just can't describe how different that was from previous experiences with me. You know, just anytime that I felt an itch or anything, she was so happy and supportive to help me work through that. And she was so good about checking on my emotional needs and the whole process. You know, how are you feeling about home birth? How are you feeling about where you're at with not having cholestasis? You know, and the thing is, this cholestasis comes on late third trimester. So it was kind of one of those waiting games for she and I, you know, will it happen? Will it not? Will it happen? Will it not? And she was just so very good about connecting with me and checking in on me. So I just have to give her that little shout out for being the amazing human she is. Yeah. She was also a prenatal yoga instructor. And so I took a lot of her classes and she taught me a lot of breathing techniques in yoga that I later used in labor. And I just love that about her, because this labor experience was so different. And I really think that's a big reason why. Mm-hmm. So going into, I guess, Labor Day, really. Mm-hmm. So pretty much did not have cholestasis, obviously, and no other issues my entire pregnancy outside of just having really low blood pressure, which is nothing out of my normal. The day of labor, I woke up and I had some bloody show. So I should add, I was 40 weeks and 1 day. Mm-hmm. And I had just seen her the day before and she was like, you're probably going to be here for another week. You know, that head isn't quite low enough. Like, it's low, but not quite low enough yet. Mm-hmm. So let's plan to meet next week. And I was kind of defeated because I was like, man, you know, like I've been having a lot of like prodromal labor type stuff, like really thinking it was going to happen sooner. And when she said that, I was like, all right, I'm just going to accept it. Like, I'm going to be pregnant for another week and that's going to be fine. And I should also add, we didn't know what this baby was. So this was our surprise gender baby. So we knew with my daughter, we knew with my son, and we decided we have one of each. So with this pregnancy, we were not finding out.
Yeah.
So I was just so excited, like a different type of excited than I was with the other two, even though very excited to meet my children with the other pregnancies. But this was just like excited to know who this baby was really for the first time. So I woke up 40 and 1, and I had a little bit of bloody show, which I know can sometimes mean, you know, labor's coming within a couple of days. So I texted my doula, I texted my midwife, I texted my birth team, and I was like, hey, had some bloody show this morning, probably going to be the next couple of days, because at this point I wasn't feeling anything. And I just kind of carried about my day, and I started to have some waves here and there, and you know, was just trying to be really communicative with my midwife, because that's what she asked of me. She said, anytime anything happens, I want to know, you know, I want to be in the know. I want to know what's going on with you. Even if you don't think it's anything, I want to know. So I was just talking with her, you know, about everything. And at one point they got a little bit timeable, but they weren't consistent at all. So, in my brain, I was not going into labor, you know, it was, it was so far away, and I still had a couple more days, you know, was in maybe very early labor, but had no idea what was coming. And about 5 o'clock that day, my doula calls me, and she was like, it sounds like you might be brewing up a baby. And I was like, yeah, maybe, but you know, I don't want to cause any panic. I would hate for everyone to come out for no good reason, you know, that sort of thing. And she was on the phone with me while I had a few contractions, and she was like, okay, well, let's maybe give it an hour, and then I'll come and I'll just see you. And I was like, okay, cool. So we get off the phone, and about 10 minutes later, lo and behold, she and my midwife had been texting, and I had no idea. But 10 minutes later, my midwife shows up at my house, and she goes, I just need to lay eyes on you. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm sitting here. I had told my husband, I was like, go shower, go do whatever you need to do. I'm going to feed the kids, you know, and I was going about my time. I was definitely having contractions at this point, but again, nothing that felt indicative of like active labor or any such thing to me. She watched me have a couple contractions, and she's like, I'm just going to hang out for a while. And I was like, okay, cool. No problem. I'm just going to keep going about my merry way. So she just sat there and she watched me while I was momming. My husband had told his mom to come into town already at this point. And I kind of discouraged him too, because I was like, labor is not anywhere close. Do not have her come. She lives an hour and a half. So do not have her come right now. That would be a waste of her time to come. But I'm happy he did, because once she got there, she took over taking care of the kids. And my midwife said, why don't you go up your stairs and down your stairs sideways, but skip a step each time. And I was like, okay, cool. I can do that. And I don't know if it's like at that point, once my mother-in-law kind of took over really taking care of the kids, and I got some time to just focus on myself and the contractions or what, but it's like at that point, I maybe kind of accepted that I was, you know, in labor. I asked my midwife to check me, because I at that point, I was still like, I don't know that this is the real deal, and I don't want you to be here all night. You know, at this point, she'd been pounding out babies back and forth, and I'm sure she was tired. And I was like, I need for you to check me so I can be mentally prepared for this. And she checked me, and at that point, I was 5 centimeters. And compared to my previous labors, I would have never, ever, ever guessed that. I was really not having much pain at all. Everything just felt like pressure and tightening to me. It was just kind of crazy. So I remember like coming downstairs and telling my husband, I'm 5 centimeters. Like, that's crazy. And he was like, what? That's awesome. Because he remembers from, again, previous labors having like, at that point I was like leaning on him nonstop, really was not communicative, you know? But here I am like moving, talking, enjoying time, you know, just kind of going with the flow. So I went up and down the stairs a couple more times at this point. And then I was just getting really hot. Like, I don't know why, but I just felt really hot. And I went upstairs and I was like, I'm going to go change everybody, you know, change into something cooler. And at that point, once I got upstairs, I just kind of felt like I needed to stay there for a little bit. And so at this point, I think my midwife told my husband, okay, it's time to get the tub ready. It's time to get all the stuff ready. You know, like, she's going to have this baby. And so I was just up there working through contractions on my own. And again, it didn't feel like anything super crazy. I figured I was going to be here all night into the next day. And I remember my mother-in-law bringing the kids upstairs to our playroom. And then I was like, okay, well, now I'm going to go downstairs because they're just playing. They're excited. They're very loud. And I just need to, you know, kind of separate myself from that again, because anytime I like hear them or anything, I just go into mom mode. Like, what are they doing? How can I help? All that jazz. So I went downstairs, and for some reason, every time my husband came around, I would just have this like really intense wave of, I want to say, I keep calling them waves because that's what I viewed them as. They, you know, come, they peak, they go. And it wasn't pain. It was just longer and felt stronger, but wasn't necessarily painful. So I thought that was kind of funny. It was like that oxytocin of him getting close to me every time I would just have this contraction. And there was one that kind of made me turn in a little bit. And my midwife said, okay, Kayla, I'm going to call. She said, I'm going to call the troops. I'm going to rally the troops in, which was my doula, her birth assistant, and my birth photographer. They were all communicating without me because I kind of just told my midwife I didn't really want an audience because I didn't believe that I was really in labor.
Yeah.
So she calls everyone to come over at that point. And I remember looking at Sam and being like, I have to tell our kids goodnight one last time, you know, before I have this baby. Mm-hmm. And so I went upstairs and he brought them into my daughter's room, you know, one at a time. And I remember just crying, like just holding them. They had no idea what was going on. And they probably thought it was so like scary because I was like, I love you so much. Like just that emotional release that I really needed before having a baby. And I just can remember their faces right now, like looking at me, like, what the heck is wrong with you? Like, you're being crazy, but just like loving on them and then sending them away. And then I went downstairs. And at that point I was like, I'm in labor. I'm going to have this baby. Mm-hmm. And, this point, the tub was filled up. The birth team had just arrived. And my midwife was like, okay, Kayla, like you can get in the tub now. And I was like, no, I'm just going to use gravity for as long as I can, because I'm probably going to be pregnant for another couple hours, you know? And she was like, okay. She was like, but I really think you should get in the tub. And I was like, okay, well, and I, you know, just worked through a couple more contractions standing up. And she was like, okay, Kayla, really get in the tub though. Like, and I was like, okay, I'm going to get in the tub. And, I had a couple contractions in there, and something that I feel like my birth team pointed out that I feel like I need to share is after every single one, I would just smile and like sigh happily. And I'd be like, there it goes, you know? And I think that was the big reason why I didn't struggle so much with the pain of labor this time around versus previous times, because I just celebrated them going rather than anticipating them coming and, you know, turning in to every contraction, just like giving into it, letting it happen, you know, letting it kind of carry me away and breathing through them, using that same yoga breath that, you know, my midwife had taught me at prenatal yoga to really breathe through them. And I remember, you know, looking up at my husband and being like, I'm going to be a prune by the time I get out of here. I got in here too soon, you know, like I shouldn't have gotten in here. And I should add that my birth team got there at 8:30. That will come into play a little later while that was relevant. And I remember like having a couple contractions and looking at my midwife and being like, everyone was like, you're doing such a great job. I mean, the environment, the room, the energy was so incredible. They were also supportive and encouraging and just in awe of me. And I felt so strong, but I also was like, they haven't seen me in transition yet. They're going to think I'm doing great right now. And then I'm going to hit transition. I'm going to be this like crazy beastly woman and they're not going to even know who I am. Mm-hmm. And my midwife looked at me and she said, I don't know, Kayla, I think you're, you know, 10 is the new 7 for you, or 7 is the new 10 or something like that, you know, basically saying she felt like I was already in transition and I was just handling it really well. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was really funny and kind of remember like laughing at her, like, you know, what does she know? And little did she know, she knew a lot more than what I realized she did. She was sitting on my couch and looked over at me after about 2 more contractions and said, you know, if you start to feel pushy, I want you to just like hold off on pushing until your body literally feels like you're throwing up out of your butt. And that's what she said to me. And I don't know if it was like my body heard what she said and or what, but it's like right after she said that, my body started pushing. And it was so crazy to me because again, like with previous labors, transition was so out of body and so hard.
Yeah.
You know, and then with this labor, it was so fast and almost so non-existent, if that makes sense. Like, I just thought it was like pretty just casual labor. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden here I am pushing. And my husband was with me the whole time. And I remember just like bracing onto him when it came to pushing. My body was heaving this baby out as hard and as fast as it could. I just don't even know. I mean, at some point my midwife got behind me. It just all happened so fast. I remember just bracing him and using his arms to pull myself up and bear down all at the same time. And at 9:42, my baby was born and I was able to pull him out myself. And that was pretty freaking amazing. And I just felt so powerful because all day I was in super denial that I was in labor. Didn't really feel any discomfort really, even through transition. I mean, I turned in maybe a little bit, but in the grand scheme of things, until I was pushing, I felt like I was still pretty in denial that it was actually happening. And then I think it was a total of 12 minutes of my body heaving this baby out. And there he was. He was on my chest and the rest is history. And then we were a family of five. So that felt so crazy that that was only 8 weeks ago. And then postpartum care was pretty great. I was able to get out of the tub and move onto my couch where they took care of me and they weighed the baby. We had our first really long nursing session. They then explained postpartum care, you know, checking my uterus, checking my bleeding, that kind of thing. And they literally tucked my husband, myself, and my newborn baby into our bed upstairs and they left. And it was the most beautiful, most glorious thing I'd ever experienced in my entire life. And I remember my husband and I just looking at each other like, we can't even sleep because did that just happen? Like the adrenaline of it all was just so unreal and crazy. And man, I mean, it all happened really so fast in the grand scheme of things. And I remember we got a little bit of sleep that night. We woke up the next morning and, you know, my children got to meet their brother for the first time in our home. You know, we weren't gone for a couple of days and the bond was just instantly so sweet and loving and it was just amazing. I did actually have my placenta encapsulated this time, which I thought was really neat. Again, with having postpartum depression with my second birth, I thought it was really important to try to do anything that I could to prevent postpartum depression. So my doula actually was also, you know, specializes in placenta encapsulation. And she did encapsulate my placenta for me. And holy cow, the difference that it has made in my energy and my mood and just everything. I mean, I will tell anyone and everyone to encapsulate their placenta if they can, because I think it was a huge factor in why I haven't experienced postpartum depression this time around. And just my energy level to have three kids, three and under, you know, has been tremendously helped by taking placenta pills. So I just had to add that little tidbit in there because she did bring those to me 48 hours after I gave birth. And then also 48 hours after I gave birth, my midwife did come back and do well checks for the baby and I. And she did that again at 1 week and then 2 weeks. And she's been still continuously checking up on me. And that's just so different because usually once you leave the hospital, you know, you don't get checked up on again until 6 weeks and no one's texting you, checking on your well-being. That's for sure. So it was such a different type of care for me and my family, you know, and just for her to come to our home, especially in the midst of COVID, it was so, I don't know, just such a blessing, such a relief, just this really feel good experience. And just knowing that she cared about me as a mom, because I think oftentimes, especially with every pregnancy that I've had prior to this, it feels like everyone just forgets about mom once baby's here.
Yeah.
And my midwife was so adamant about checking on me and texting me and saying, how is your mental health today? How are you handling things? Like, I really want to spend time focusing on you. And that was, I don't know, just so important for me and made me feel like loved and, you know, valued as a mom. And even though I'm not technically a new mom, but I am a new mom to, you know, three kids instead of two. So it was just really comforting to have her just be with me through all the experiences. And she and I are still in touch to this day. And I just love her so much. I could just say so many good things about her. But again, finding her was really hard, you know, and it's home birth midwives are just not as accessible.
Yeah.
So
on the East Coast, especially.
Yeah. And that's crazy. So my husband has family in Canada and in California, and just to hear the differences in both places and what the normal is there versus what the normal is here has just been really eye-opening to me, and how there's just such a need for birth education in the first place, and really a focus on moms and postpartum and fourth trimester. You know, there needs to be more support for them afterwards, and not just support groups, but even their healthcare providers need to be more supportive, other than just saying, well, here's what postpartum depression looks like, and hands them a pamphlet that tells them that if they don't love their baby, then they have postpartum depression. Cause that's just not what it is. And that's just not how it looks like every single time. Mm. So
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, I have 5.5 pages of notes.
Well, three births, 5.5 pages.
No, thank you. And honestly, like, just to start with your last postpartum, like where you are now in postpartum, that is amazing that your midwife has like stayed in contact, but also came every like once or like second week to check on you to make sure that you're doing well. Cause we do not see, I have not heard that from anyone in the US yet. At all.
Really? Yeah. And I think that's the best part about home birthing. I mean, they care about you and your baby, you know, it's so different.
Yeah. Cause even with most people I've heard that have worked with midwives in the US that I've had on the podcast, it's usually the 6th week. And I'm like, but where's the meetup between birth and the 6 weeks? But I have not
heard
the first person. So that's amazing. I'm glad that you've gotten that experience. And it sounds like your midwife was just like, this is your body. We're going to let you do what you need to do. And
yeah, she was literally an angel sent from heaven. She was. She was just such a unicorn. And I tell everyone about her. I'm like, please, whatever you do, try to find you someone like her, because we all deserve her. You know, every woman who's giving birth and having a baby deserves someone who cares about them and trusts their choices.
Yeah.
You know?
And so going back to your first pregnancy, that's going way back.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. So
that's okay. I know, it's okay. Why did your doctor think that it would be okay to do a cervical sweep without your permission? And then just to later.
I'm not honestly even sure. I mean, this is, to be honest, the same doctor that when I told him that I was considering doing an all natural pregnancy, that he kind of laughed in my face and was like, well, you'll see when you're in labor. And I think I knew at that point that he wasn't really the provider for me, but I think it was kind of one of those, I'm so deep into this pregnancy and switching providers right now seems like more work than necessary. And then when that happened, and I remember texting my mom, and my mom being like, Kayla, it sounds like he did something he wasn't supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought about it and I was like, oh yeah, you're right. You know, and just knowing at that point that no matter the headache that it was about to cause myself and my poor husband, but we needed to change providers, because if he was willing to do something against my permission, then I couldn't imagine what my birth would have looked like with him.
Absolutely. And it was at 34 weeks.
Wow. Yeah. Which I also thought was really strange. And I can't remember for the life of me now why he had to do a pelvic exam at that point. I think there was something going on and I needed for him to check. Mm-hmm. Because I know typically they don't even start pelvic checks until like 36 weeks at a standard OB office. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just remember being like, what in the world is this? Why am I in this pain? Why am I bleeding? You know, and of course, conveniently after he did a pelvic exam, and it was definitely uncomfortable. And now I have had a sweep because I did have a sweep with my daughter later, once I was almost 42 weeks pregnant and they were threatening, you know, induction. And I did end up having a sweep with them, and I was like, yep, felt pretty similar. So
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And is this the same doctor that dismissed you with the IUD?
It is. Yeah. And you would think that I wouldn't have gone back to this provider, but at the time that was on my insurance covered. And that's pretty much an entirely different story is what insurance in the US covers. And, you know, so it was kind of one of those things where I felt stuck and I still had to see him for this IUD situation. And it was just such a nasty experience all around.
Absolutely. And then you like went to Canada during your second pregnancy and you're just like, oh, okay, so completely different rounds of care,
yeah,
insurance and everything.
Yeah, it was so crazy. I mean, just so different. And I mean, even the doctors that I saw there, they were MFM specialists because of me having a bleed. And they were, the care was just so different. It was so focused on me. It wasn't rushed. They took the time to explain the things that they were doing. And it wasn't like fear mongering into doing something I didn't want to do. There were options, there were discussions. I was a part of the discussion. Very, very different from the care I experienced here.
Yeah. And so when you were in Canada, you said you were 24 weeks and you fell down the stairs and you had, I wrote it down, probably did not get it right.
A subchorionic hematoma.
Yeah. So what is that?
So it's basically a bleed that happens when your placenta tries to pull away from your uterus. And it just creates like a pool of blood. Now, sometimes it will be a subchorionic hemorrhage, which I fortunately did not have, but it's where that blood releases and comes out, and it can cause a big bleed during pregnancy. Sometimes it can be completely, you know, harmless, and other times it can actually mean that there's a serious problem with the placenta actually pulling away from the uterus. So the biggest reason for putting me on bed rest was to make sure that I didn't end up having a hemorrhage, because they were afraid that it would end up causing my placenta to separate from my uterus. So they put me on bed rest until it went down significantly, and it did end up going down. I was monitored pretty regularly to make sure that the size was shrinking. So I was pretty lucky for that, but I think they feel like it had I kept going that, you know, kept going as I was before, that it probably would have gotten worse. So
yeah. No, and it sounds like your second pregnancy and postpartum journey was a roller coaster.
Yeah, it was really crazy. And it's just so funny because it was probably the one, well, outside of this last one, you know, compared to the first, I just did so much planning for it. And I think that just goes to show that you can have a plan all you want, and however it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I mean, there are definitely some things that you can do to control certain outcomes, but sometimes your body and your birth plan just has a mind of its own.
Yeah. And I think it's also so important that, if I pronounce this wrong, correct me, coleostasis. Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I had actually never heard of this until 2 years ago. I don't know if you've listened to a podcast. It's with yoga girl, Rachel Braithen, and she had Amelia on from Canada, and she had actually the same thing. She was really, really itchy, and she would continue to tell her doctor, and they were like, oh, we're sure it's nothing, like yada, yada, yada. And then she finally got closer to, I think maybe 38 or 39 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. At that point, they finally did the test, but she had gone into labor because she said it takes about 5 days to get the test results back.
Yeah.
And by the time they had done the C-section and everything, she had lost her child because they did not do it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that makes me so sad.
I had never heard this. Yeah. Until her.
Yeah. And see, that was my fear when they told me, and you know, then they tell you your child's heart can just spontaneously stop, and you're just like, wait a minute, what? And then they're like, analyze every movement and do this. And that just became a really restless sensation for me. Like every movement I was analyzing, well, has he moved a lot today? Or did that movement make sense? Or what, you know, or how am I feeling? Like, it was just really scary and so much anxiety around it. At that point, there was no relaxing and no just taking it in and accepting it. It was just like, I need to be induced right now, because if not, my child's going to die. And that's just how I felt, you know?
And that's terrifying. And it also seems like, I mean, obviously you had your doula and your husband, but it seems like a lot of the providers during that labor and birth weren't overly comforting as well. Cause you had, you know, the shaking after the Pitocin was giving with the intense cramps and then the gush of blood. And the nurse was like, I've never seen this before. Let me go find someone to figure out what it is. And you're like, seriously?
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like maybe they're almost desensitized by it, you know, like they've seen so much of it that they just, and I don't take away from the nurses in the hospital, because they're amazing in their own way. But sometimes I think that they forget that the person who's going through it has never experienced it before. And it's the first time that they're going through it, and to, like, you know, support them through that emotionally, just like you're maybe supporting them through it physically. The emotional aspect is so huge in birth and labor. And I think that a lot of providers just forget that, you know, they're so focused on policies and procedures that they just forget there's such an emotional person and being behind this actual thing that's going on itself.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's why a lot of people have turned to midwifery care, because I think obviously midwifery care has their protocols and everything, but it's a bit, I think nurses and doctors are left to very textbook, like everything is very textbook. So this person on the table is just another textbook number rather than an individual. So I think sometimes, that does show up.
And I think especially like when you're thinking about even postpartum depression, you know, I I just feel like they give you this pamphlet and they're literally like, okay, if you feel like you don't love your baby and you can't connect with your baby, then you have postpartum depression. Or if you think you want to kill yourself, and, you know, well, yes, that is a form of postpartum depression, but postpartum depression could take so many different forms and look so different for every person. And it's really unfair to just say that that's the only way that you can be diagnosed with it.
I 100% agree with you. I've had two other mothers on here who have had the exact same experiences that you said. The fear that something bad is going to happen. You're constantly analyzing it in your head.
Yeah.
You said it was completely irrational. Like, looking back, they're like, obviously now I know it's irrational, but when you're in the midst of it, all of that stuff is very, very real in your head.
And it just completely consumes you and your thoughts and everything you do. And then you just feel the need to just stay busy to keep yourself from doing it or thinking about it, you know. And I remember having a really hard time sleeping because I would just lay in bed at night. And maybe this is just, you know, the woman in me who's just the busy minded person all the time. But also I feel like postpartum depression really contributed to just me laying up at night in bed and just thinking of all the things I hadn't done or that I needed to do or that could go wrong, you know. And it was just like this super just restless place to be all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also wanted to say the your son having jaundice and dealing with the dairy issues also probably didn't help going through the postpartum depression as well. That's probably an added stress to it.
Yeah, definitely. And two, because I felt so hopeless and helpless. Like I didn't know how to fix it. I didn't know how long it was going to take. I felt like my baby was in pain and there was nothing I could do, even though I was trying my best. You know, I just... just one of those things that, you know, there's no instant fix for a dairy allergy. There's no instant fix for reflux. There's no instant fix for jaundice. And just, again, all the possibilities of what could happen. And, you know, should I keep breastfeeding? Is it worth it? And I'm lucky that I stuck it out. And I would encourage anyone whose, you know, child has been diagnosed with a dairy allergy to definitely stick it out. And I mean, it pays off to do it, but man, is it hard and is it emotionally and mentally taxing? Because I ended up losing about 30 pounds because I couldn't figure out what I could eat. It was a real big stress.
So, no, it is, because dairy is in everything. Like, I know dairy and eggs seems to be a really common allergy coming up in newborns. And if you've never had to cut those out, you realize that dairy and egg, or even if it's just egg white or like, you know, isn't everything.
Every single thing. Yes.
I was talking to one of our doulas whose child was diagnosed with a dairy allergy as well. And she's like, even if you try to switch to formula, like there's so much dairy in formula. She's like, you literally cannot find an out. I had no idea. Yeah.
And the thing is it's really is painful for your baby when their stomach is going through this too. And that's what's so sad is you could just hear the pain and in his cry. And I just felt so helpless. Like, how can I fix this for him? And again, it takes 2 months to completely get out of your system. So it felt like for those 2 months, it was just this grueling, long experience thinking, is this ever going to get better? And it did end up getting better, but it wasn't without some growing pains, honestly.
Yeah. And that would have been difficult for you and the baby and your husband.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of sleepless nights and a lot of tears were shed.
Yeah. And then your third pregnancy and birth, which was fairly recent, just sounds like a breeze.
It was a literal dream. And I mean, sometimes I feel bad for saying that because I know that that's not everyone's experience. I mean, even in my own two prior births and pregnancies, it wasn't my experience. But I mean, I was so determined and adamant. I mean, I ate a whole foods diet. I took so many supplements. I worked out regularly. I saw a chiropractor. I, you know, sought out care where I felt like I was being heard and listened to. And I honestly just, you know, I felt like I did all the things that I could do, and I would have been okay if it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, because if you do all that you can do, that's literally all that you can do. But I was so happy that it did turn out that way because it was such a redemption for me in a lot of ways. And I don't know, the power that you get when you give birth, no matter how you give birth, whether it's a belly birth, whether it's a vaginal birth, whether it's induction or whatever it is, spontaneous, you know, all birth is empowering. But there is something to be said about when you work really hard not to have the same pre-existing condition that you had prior in a previous pregnancy, you know, and then you're able to have this really successful birth without that condition. there's something to be said about that and how you feel after, you know, it just felt like on such this high, like I did it. Like I really did beat cholestasis, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know of people who have done it too. And maybe they didn't do all the things that I did, but I do feel like all the things that I did helped to prevent me from getting it again.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you did so much. And I think it's actually so incredible that you managed to, you know, not get it and that you found these other routes, because so many people, especially on the East Coast, I feel like the holistic care outlook isn't common yet. It's more common on the East Coast. So how did you find out about a chiropractor and nutrition and getting supplementation and everything?
Yeah, so my doula, again, pretty amazing resource for me. And I really regret not having a doula for my first pregnancy because she is just such a great resource. And she connected me with this chiropractor who, you know, they're all Webster certified, which is basically a pregnancy chiropractor. And then they are very holistically minded. So they carry this, homeopathic supplement by standard process. And they just sat down with me at the beginning after taking over all of my history. And I really just stressed to them, my main goal is not to have cholestasis in this pregnancy. That is my absolute top notch goal. So anytime you adjust me, I want you to focus on gallbladder, gut health, those kind of things. And then they did this nutrition course with me within the chiropractic office where they talked about the different kind of foods to eat. Just like in general, gallbladder, gut health kind of stuff. And then they encouraged me to take these supplements, AF beta food and Choicol before each meal. And I honestly, like I said, I was at the point where I was willing to try literally anything to prevent it. So I did all the things and, you know, I really think it helped in the long run. And even if that's not the reason why I didn't get cholestasis, the way I felt just by taking quality care of my body, eating whole foods, taking these supplements that improved my overall digestive health, I mean, I just felt so good my entire pregnancy. My joints felt good. I had good energy. I felt like I could work out. I felt like, you know, I was able to be healthy for myself and my baby and still be healthy minded and, you know, healthy body for my toddlers. It was just overall a good pregnancy and birth experience.
Absolutely. And like you even said, you were smiling after each contraction.
Yeah.
People think that's impossible, but it can happen if you have the right type of care that you want. And you are told that you can do this. That's completely different types of care than what you had prior.
You're so right. And honestly, I still think back to that, the energy in that room and the fact that every person in that room, they were like my personal cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. They believed in me. They valued me. They cherished me. And just the warmth and kindness in that room and to feel like I was respected and honored, you know, like everything about me was just respected and honored. And I felt so safe. And I think that is really, people are like, I'm so in awe of you. How did you have basically a pain-free birth experience? And I'm like, I just felt so encouraged and supported by all the people that I chose to be on my birth team. And that's why I think it's really important to think about who you want to be a part of your birth experience, finding a care provider who will genuinely help you do exactly what you want in your birth. And, you know, bringing people in who are like-minded in the way that a birthing experience should go and how you would want it to go. You know, and everyone being on the same page really just made me feel so safe and comforted. And that is a big reason why I think I was able to just relax and turn into the contractions instead of feeling like I was just being watched like an audience of and expected to perform a certain way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the other things I wanted to ask you is I know that you said you had your OBGYN clinic from the past midwives, like that referral on call. So did they know that you were doing the home birth?
Yes. So, the birthing center that I ended up kind of going with after the, initial OB set. Yes. I did communicate with them and tell them that I was going to use them as co-care. So we set up kind of an altered plan. So they saw me 5 times in my pregnancy and they did all of my ultrasounds and blood work. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way that they would take me on in case I got cholestasis. So I did have co-care option with them and they actually knew my home birth midwife. And so they were comfortable. Yeah. So they were pretty comfortable with me having home birth with her so long as everything checked out, you know, safely.
Yeah, I love that because I know that a lot of times it's so frustrating to try to get midwives licensure and regulation in America because there's still so much stigma. Like, no, these professionals are trained and they're trained in a holistic natural birth type of care and they're so needed. And I just it's also just fabulous that the OBGYN was like, yeah, we know like you're midwife and it's fine. So I'm really glad.
Yeah, they're so cool about it. And I mean, like you're saying, midwives are just trained to think of birth as a normal thing that happens to people. And this has always been something that I've told my husband that drives me crazy. Like when I look back at my charts from my OB, because of course they're these big medical corporations, so I still can access all of my charts. There's literally this thing that says problem list and they have pregnancy on the problem list. And that just drives me crazy because it's not a problem. I mean, yes, there can be complications with it, but it's a normal, natural part of life that happens to birthing people, you know? And I just always thought that was so crazy to me that it was considered a problem at an obstetrics office, you know, and midwife, you know, midwives, they take care of the whole person all the time. And pregnancy is just something that happens to the whole person. So
absolutely. And so after you gave birth, would you say that within that, would you say that your first week or two was different than your previous pregnancy's first 2 weeks, if that makes sense?
Yeah. yes. For a lot of reasons, the care that I received, definitely the placenta pills giving me different energy and just, I don't know, you know, just making me feel a lot better in my own self. And then being that it was my third time around, breastfeeding was pretty easy for me because at this point I, you know, kind of knew how to troubleshoot different things that were happening. But additionally, my midwife really stressed to my husband and my mother-in-law who was there at the time, the kind of care that I needed to take for myself in that time. Mm-hmm. And that was something that obviously wasn't really stressed in the past. So I think with my first two pregnancies, I just kind of expected myself, like put these expectations on myself to just bounce up, take care of everything, clean the house, do the laundry. And I forgot about me and taking care of me. And this time my midwife was very adamant to not only talk to me, but to talk to my husband and to talk to my mother-in-law who were going to be here, you know, this first couple of weeks and stressed that I needed to take care of me first. And I thought that that was so important. And something that, again, we just forget, we put these really crazy expectations on moms to just bounce back and do all this stuff. And the fact that I was able to really take the time to heal and take care of myself first really made the healing process in this first couple of weeks a lot more enjoyable. And I actually feel like I've enjoyed my newborn a lot more this time around because I've just been able to soak him all in.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long was is your mother-in-law still there?
She's not. No, she was pretty much there for the first week. And then she comes back and forth to help occasionally. But she was there for that first week. And then my husband, he did not get any paternity leave, which again is another first frustrating thing. But fortunately, he had some PTO saved up. So he did take 5 weeks off to be with me. Yeah, I don't even know how I would have made it through without
I love that. So so this time, would you say you had any type of baby blues or depression?
No, I really don't think so. I mean, I think the hardest thing for me in this time was just emotionally, and this even happened with my second, just making sure that I'm still tending to my toddler's emotional needs and recognizing that this is a big change for them too. And I think every mom probably goes through that little bit of mom guilt when you bring a new baby into the world and you already have your other babies. And every mom thinks, how can my heart ever grow enough to love one more person? Yeah. So I think for me, that was probably really the only thing, but no, I think taking that time to take care of myself also allowed me to protect my mental health. And I'm not saying that that's not the case for everyone, because some people may take the time to physically heal and still experience the baby blues. But for me, I think that was a huge factor in why I didn't experience them, is because I didn't put any expectations on myself. I told myself I was going to take the time that I needed to heal and, you know, still recognize that my toddlers had needs, but also understand that there were other people capable of helping them with their needs.
Mm. Yeah, I think all of those are really important points to have. And I'm also interested about the placenta encapsulation. Obviously, I've seen a lot of this on Instagram because I follow a lot of doulas and we have doulas on the directory, but I didn't realize the benefits of it. So that's incredible.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I mean, the thing is it puts so much iron back into your body too, you know, lose when you lose all this crazy blood. So I think that alone helps with your healing a lot faster. And then just those hormones, I mean, a ton of hormones are released when you have a baby and your body goes through so many changes. So it kind of puts them back into place. Mm-hmm. And my mood and my energy, I just cannot say enough good things about how I feel like that has shifted everything for me. I mean, granted, my birth experience was significantly different from the other two. And I do firmly think that that contributed to how I feel and my outlook on it mm-hmm. overall too. But I really think the placenta pills, I could always tell when I took them that I had this like, you know, sense of energy again. And I feel like if I didn't take them or I took them too late in the day, I knew it, I could feel it. It was a shift in my body. So I always thought that was kind of crazy. And, you know, to be honest, with my first pregnancy and even second pregnancy, I knew about it, but I thought it was a little strange. I really did. I was like, ew, I'm not going to eat my placenta. That's gross. And then you do the research on it and you're like, holy cow, like this is really a scientific thing. And it's really quite amazing. And our bodies are so incredible. Like, why can't our bodies do one more amazing thing like that?
Yeah.
So I gave it a shot. And now if I ever have another baby, I will 100% do it. And I will recommend it to every person that I ever see that is having a baby, because if you have the chance to encapsulate your placenta, you definitely should. It is worth the money and will just make you feel so much better after having a baby.
Yeah, that is awesome. And thank you so, so much for coming on. I appreciate all of this. To be honest, I think I'm going to make this two parts.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Probably going to make it a two-part thing.
No, that sounds great. I've really enjoyed it. I am such a birth nerd and I love it. And my biggest thing is advocating for moms to find providers that truly listen to them, and also advocating for themselves in postpartum and knowing that postpartum doesn't look the same for everyone, and to find help if people feel like they need it, you know. And I wish that there was more normal around women seeking support in postpartum.
Yeah.
You know, I wish that there wasn't such a stigma on women needing help.
Mm. And that it's also about mom postpartum, not just about baby.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing, is people always forget about mom. Yeah. Baby gets here and we throw mom aside. And I think during pregnancy, everyone's like, take care of yourself, work out, eat healthy, you know, oh, you better get your blood pressure checked out. It's a little too high. It's going to put stress on baby. And then we have baby. And now it's like, well, your house is dirty and you're not making, you know, organic meals every night for you and your entire family. And oh, breastfeeding's not working out for you the way it's supposed to, or you're not cloth diapering, or goodness, it's just so many expectations mm-hmm. on this person who just grew a human, you know, for 9 months and now has that human on the outside, and they're both learning to exist together. And yeah, we've got to stop putting these expectations on these moms that are unrealistic, because mental health is so important, and mom's mental health is most important, because if mom is not in a good place, baby can't be in a good place.
No. And yeah, thank you for all of this. I think it's absolutely incredible, everything you've given back. And if anyone ever wants to reach out to you to ask you any questions, or just tell them that they tell you that they love your story, where can they find you?
Yeah. So I would love to have people reach out and talk to me, even if they just want to share their stories with me. I'm most active on Instagram at Kayla_D_Steinberg. But yeah, that's really where I would love for people to reach out to me. I'm trying to create a community out there just to kind of normalize my postpartum experience as it's happening, and my experience as a mom of two toddlers and a newborn. So I would love to have people come over and hang out with me on my Instagram.
We want to thank Kayla so much for coming on and sharing her story. We know we broke it into two parts, but I just thought that this type of story and how long it was deserved two parts, so that people could actually sit down and make time to listen to it, and for Kayla to have that space. It was incredible to be able to hear her different birth experiences, and we grieve with her first two pregnancies and births, because she did deserve better care. But that is something that she has been able to advocate in her last pregnancy for, and is willing to advocate and maybe even go on to become a doula or a midwife. We never know. If you're interested in reaching out to Kayla, you can find her on Instagram at Kayla_D_Steinberg, and she'd be more than happy to talk to you. If you are a mother or parent and you would love to come on and tell your story, you can email us at hello@theonestcollaborative.com. And if you are a provider, go ahead and sign up for our directory. We'd love to have you on. All right, see you all next week. Bye.